Okay. Welcome. My name is Stephen Houghton, and I'm going to talk about troubleshooting packet loss. I apologize for my own voice quality. So it's a cold or something. So I try to get through it. It's not the emotions. So thank you to our sponsors for making this event possible. I think there's a great lineup of speakers and also a really nice show up of attendees. Great. So a little bit about myself. I'm working as an independent consultant and trainer from the Netherlands. As a trainer, I do mostly Sky for Business training. As a consultant, I mainly do troubleshooting, voice-related deployments. I used to work in the telephony, so that's useful when you do Sky for Business deployments. And I also do sessions at events like this one. So let's talk about troubleshooting. The full title of my session: troubleshooting packet loss, is it really the network? And the reason for that is that when you start looking at your monitoring server or other things that you have in place, quite often packet loss will show up, and it's easy to blame the network, but actually quite often it isn't the network. And if it is the network, then it's important that you have the right set of information to be able to show the network people what's going on, or help them to troubleshoot that. So that's the reason for this session. I see it a lot, so I do a lot of voice deployments and troubleshooting voice deployments, and quite often people forgot to think about the network impact, or vice versa, the impact of Skype for Business on your network. So that's an important thing. So we'll talk about voice quality, what are the influences for that, what's happening in the background, the audio pipeline for that, and then we'll talk a bit more about troubleshooting, of course, how to detect issues, and of course, how to fix them. So let's talk about voice quality. Who is familiar with mouth to ear as a term? That's usually the response I get. It's a pretty old school term that we used to have in telephony. Mouth to ear, well, you recognize the picture here. So mouth to ear is what can happen between you speaking and someone else hearing it, transferring over the network, device that takes that plays a role in that. More commonly known is the term quality of experience. That's also the term that Microsoft is using, QoE for short. And with quality of experience, there's a term that Microsoft is using as our underpinnings, and that's called the mean opinion score, or MOS for short. And MOS runs from 1 to 5, higher is better. And a lot more about MOS in a moment. But let's talk a bit more about the voice quality. So you don't, there are things happening between you talking and someone else hearing, and that's your microphone, your network, and the receiving device. And I've created a nice diagram for that. So we will talk about the complete, well, the part of the audio pipeline. So in nice pink is the network side of things. This is actually information you can find in great detail in the networking guide. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. So the first yellow bit is about capturing audio. So using a microphone, the media client, or the Link Sky for Business client, will ensure that it gets ready to send over your network. And the first step is encoding. So the main purpose of encoding is saving bandwidth. That's what happens. And encoding happens with Microsoft, with RTLO or Silk for peer-to-peer traffic, or you know, depending on the receiving end, actually. So encoding is just to save bandwidth. It's an important step. To know which codec can be used, something happens. So that is RTCP in the background. RTCP stands for real-time control protocol. It actually will send out the probe packet to detect the available bandwidth. And based on that, the decision will, that's one of the factors that play a part in deciding which codec is going to be used. So the other thing you need to know is, what is the other side capable of? So from a codec perspective. And that is where SDP comes in, session description protocol. This is a capture that you can make yourself with the infamous Snooper tool, or any other tool that can capture SIP traffic. Always be aware that when it comes to SIP, Microsoft is using encryption, so that's why it's usually easier to use Snooper or centralized logging to capture this information. But in over here, you can see the codecs in the order that they are preferred by this client. So in this case, we have a Skype for Business client, and that Skype for Business client likes to see Silk first. So if the other side also supports Silk, then that will be used if we have enough bandwidth. The next step will be RT Audio Wideband. We also have G722. We have Siren even there. We have the G711 codecs. We have the narrowband version of Silk, and also the narrowband version of RT Audio. So it usually starts with the best quality, and if that's not possible, then they will go a step down. So that's another factor. If you look at this is a sample of the monitoring server. We'll talk about that in a moment in great detail. But if you look at the details for this specific session, you can also see the codec that was being used, the Silk Wideband codec. And we'll talk a lot more about these factors in a moment. But we had a pretty good goal here. So bandwidth and codecs, so based on the available bandwidth, so bandwidth can be limited artificially by using column mission control. That will play a part. If that's in place, then that will be taken into account too. But UC is peer-to-peer call and conference call as well. That's a conference call. So what happens is that we try to use Silk, and Silk is the default codec for Link 2013 for Silk, for Skype consumer, Skype for business, for the mobile clients. Most clients will try to use Silk. Silk does require more than one CPU core. So if you use devices that don't support that, some IP phones don't, then they will use another codec. Could be RT Audio, could be G722. And the bitrate also plays a part there. So the reason, so Microsoft developed RT Audio themselves back in the old days. RT Audio stands for real-time audio. Microsoft bought or acquired Skype, as you probably know, Skype Consumer, and they were using the Silk codec. And it turned out that the Silk codec provides a higher quality, audio quality, and is also better capable of handling things like jitter and packet loss. So it's a better codec. It does take a little bit more bandwidth, but that's okay if you look at the benefits that you get from there. So we'll see more about MOS in a second. So the bandwidth, the capabilities of the other side, all play part in the selection of the codec. Excuse me. And then it's time for the next step, and that will be protocol encapsulation. And that means using RTP, real-time protocol, and RTCP, real-time control protocol, to set up the audio stream, in this case audio. This is just for your own, for reading later, but so a couple of things happen, and one thing that you should know is that if you try to capture traffic, RTP traffic, with, for instance, Wireshark or another non-Microsoft tool, then you could run into some issues, because Microsoft has created their own extensions for RTP as they are allowed per the RFC. And that can sometimes be a bit hard to interpret with, that's not my voice, that's just me. So the with, for instance, Wireshark, but there was actually, I think you wrote a plugin for that, right? I think, yeah, you did, Johan did. So you can use that. So so bandwidth estimation happens here, packet loss notification, policy server bandwidth, and things like that. Audio healing, a bit more about that later on. It's also reported through RTCP in this case, so it's pretty important for us. One of the really cool things that is happening in the background, so we are setting up audio, that means UUP traffic, and that's hard to control, and that's why they are using RTCP to get a notification about packet loss. And if you get a notification, then you can take some action to try to remedy it. So the next step is encryption, and that's secure RTP, what Microsoft is using. And then it's finally time to go to the network. So the transmission phase. Now you go to the network, there are a couple of things that are really important to know. Not sure if you all are familiar with these terms, latency, jitter and packet loss. Well, this is the star of the session, the last one, but so latency and jitter basically means that packets don't arrive on time, and packet loss means that we lose them, so we don't get them at all. So there are different ways of handling delays as opposed to packet loss. Latency is something that is distance related, so sometimes it is what it is. You have to cover a certain distance. It can also mean that you have network congestion, so that's something to monitor. And another thing that can happen, routing issues, especially when you see different round trip times per session or with the same people involved. Jitter is the variation in delay. It's actually harder to compensate that from a technical point of view. And high average jitter will add to the delay, so it will make it worse. And that is because it's going to be buffered. And it can also lead to buffer drops. You usually can improve that with quality of service. And that is a common theme with a lot of networking issues. So, losing packets, what can be the cause of that? It could be that you have an overloaded network. It could be that you have failing links. It can lead to dropped calls, so that's really annoying for your users. It can also, again, usually be improved by quality of service. If you have asymmetric packet loss, that usually means that you have a duplex mismatch. So that's another thing to think about. Excuse me. So. All right, so now we're at the other end, the receiving end. Actually, things can still go wrong because the computer itself, the link server or Sky for Business server, could also be causing some issues here. So more about that in a moment. Decryption is happening, and then it's time for decoding and reassembly and buffering. So this is where the jitter buffering, jitter buffer takes place. So if a jitter occurs, then the media stack will buffer that. It's a dynamic buffer, so if we have more jitter, then the buffer will grow, and that is to compensate for jitter up to a point. The next step is audio healing, and this is actually pretty cool technique that's built into not just Skype for Business, but other VoIP vendors also use audio healing techniques. And audio healing is used to compensate for jitter or packet loss. And extrapolation, also known as concealment, is basically calculating what is missing up to a point. So usually 20 milliseconds or something like that, not for minutes in it. Another cool term I like is time warping, and that is audio stretching and audio compression. It can be really bad, so it can sound like the Smurfs or something. So it's that's not a good thing. It's usually something that users will complain about. So perception is key, and that is the reason why they have these techniques in place is that we try to avoid any gaps in the audio. So if you have gaps in the audio, that's something that we will notice, and that is why the VoIP vendors have all these techniques in place to try to compensate for that. So it's better enough not to need this, but if you do, it's there. Another technique that's being used is forward error correction control. So that is specifically to compensate for packet loss. It will come at a bandwidth cost because you need to send out more data over your network. And this is actually something that is triggered by that RTCP mechanism. So when we get the notification that there is indeed packet loss, then forward error correction will be automatically triggered. It actually only will start doing that when there is sensing doing so. So if the packet loss is too bad to compensate, then it's not going to happen. And that probably means that the user will hang up the call. That's probably what's going to happen. So this is actually something I simulated. This is not my normal network, just so you know. But it's So what can be the impact of network related issues on your end user base? So call reliability, we can have drop calls, we can have fail calls. Audio quality, we can have broken up audio, we can have delay, distortion or echo. Distortion could be because of the audio healing process happening in the background, so you hear a metallic sound, for instance. They can all be due to the network. So that, let's talk a little bit about MOS. MOS stands for Mean Opinion Score, and it is a way of giving a quality label to an audio call. So you could ask your users, but that gets annoying after a while, so they don't do that. They use a model for that, that looks at a couple of details from that specific session, and based on that it predicts what the MOS score would have been. That's a very normal way of doing things, and Microsoft does the same thing. So Microsoft is doing something a little bit different than other vendors. They provide us with multiple MOS versions or variations. The main MOS is Network MOS or NMOS. And Network MOS looks at, well, the network factors, like, yeah, the usual ones. So your codec, packet loss, jitter, all things like that. So what's really important to remember with Network MOS is that the codec decides what the highest MOS score can be. So it differs per codec. Packet loss and jitter will have a negative impact on the MOS score for a certain call. Listening MOS actually goes a bit further than just the network. It will also look at a device specific or capture related information. We also have the sending MOS, again device related information, and when you mix them you get the conversational MOS. So this is what you can see in your monitoring report. So what has an impact on your MOS score? Network MOS will be impacted by congestion, so not having enough bandwidth, for instance, packet loss and jitter. Your sending MOS will be impacted by device issues or background noise or things like that. Excuse me. So let's have a look at the different codecs again and what the maximum MOS score can be. So the higher the better. A maximum up to 5, but that's not going to happen. Between 1 and 4.9 is usually what you see. And here you can see again that Silk has a higher MOS score than RT Audio, even the wideband version of RT Audio has. So that this is not something that Microsoft just came up with. There's a testing mechanism for that they have to comply to. So it's standard based, but you can also see that if you look at the wideband version of RT Audio versus the narrowband version of RT Audio, it is quite a step in the audio quality. It will save you half the bandwidth, but it comes at a quality cost. Silk actually also has narrowband and wideband versions. G722, but that's what we use for conferencing. Siren is the older codec that we still there for conferencing if you don't have enough bandwidth available. And we also have RT Audio Narrowband. They still do that when you dial out to the PSTN. They don't use Silk, but they use the RT Audio Narrowband for that. Unless you have media bypass in place, in that case you would use G711. So it's that's an important thing to keep in mind. So we're actually not interested in the MOS score by itself, but we want to know how good it could have been. And that is where MOS degradation comes in. So MOS degradation is really useful in monitoring reports because it's a great way of seeing how it differs from the optimum. And in this case, with MOS degradation, the lower the better. And causes, again, for MOS degradation can be congestion, wireless interference, And also, what I see a lot is overloaded servers. So people that don't put enough hardware in them, or they forget to create exclusions for the antivirus. So, just a second. So it is something that we can use to see how things are doing. So the official metric that you can see if you do a SIP capture or something like that is degradation average metric. And we are going to have a look at monitoring in a moment. So when you see packet loss occurring, you really need to know whether it's a network or not. Is it Skype for Business or is it a network or something else? And for that, I'm going to use for this session, the monitoring server and the key health indicators. The two great tools. There are a lot of other tools out there that you could use, but for now, that's it. You always when you do troubleshooting, you want to look at incidents versus structural issues. So do you see it a lot, or is it an incident? Is it a specific user? Is it from a specific subnet, specific devices, things like that? Maybe you need to do a network capture. So think about the extensions that I talked about, the RTP extensions. Also think about encryption that Microsoft is using. So if you just do a Wireshark trace on your network, you're not going to see any SIP traffic passing by, but RTP works. You can also use the message analyzer. So the Microsoft message analyzer, who has worked with that? So good, most of you. So what I really like in the message analyzer is that you can also select the application that is generating the traffic. And that's something that you cannot do with Wireshark. So that's very useful. So let's look at monitoring server. So I'm going to switch to the demo mode in a moment. So the monitoring server will look at qualitative experience. We also have call detail record information in there, but for now we focus on qualitative experience. I'm going to talk a little bit about call quality methodology to introduce the key health indicators. Stoller is later going to talk a lot more about call quality dashboard, maybe a little bit about rate my call, but that's a really interesting tool to use too for troubleshooting purposes or other things. So by now you know a bit more about how the media stack handles things. So when you are going to look at your monitoring data, it's good to be aware of any jitter related issues, any forward error correction control that's happening, or other audio healing that happens. And that can be really useful to understand quality of experience. So how I like to approach things. So this is the monitoring server in Skype for Business. And for this topic, I would focus on the media quality diagnostics reports over here. And that gives you a couple of things that you can look at. So we'll start with the media quality summary report. And in the media quality summary report, you can see your audio calls, your video calls, and your application sharing. In my case, I did not have any PSTN calls. But usually you would see them here too if you use Skype for Business for telephony. And this is a really great overview to see how what the health is of your environment or your customer's environment. So Microsoft provides you the usual suspects here. So how many calls did you have? How many calls were poor? And probably you see a lot of poor calls using wireless. That happens a lot. The people don't think about VoIP before they start using wireless together with Skype for Business. It can be done, very, very good, but you have to think about it. VPN and VoIP or unified communications traffic is not always a good combination. Same thing for external calls. And here you can see the average route trip for all the calls that occurred over this period. And here we have the most degradation. So the most degradation looks at what the maximum quality could have been and what it was. And the difference is as is presented as moss degradation. So again, the lower the better. The yellow marking is done by the monitoring server to indicate that I should do something about that, or at least have a good look. We're going to do that in a moment. And you can also see what the factor was. So here I had packet loss issues. Jitter seems to be okay, or within limits, but packet loss is really not okay. And you can also see that audio healing happened. So healer concealment is the interpolation of packets, and stretching and compressing is well, the time warping mechanism. So let's focus on the calls there. So, oh, sorry. If you look at the call list, so just click on the blue call volume there, then that will give you the call list report. And here we can see all the calls that occurred over that time frame. And you can already see the red over here, so that's not good. So per session, you can again see the same information. So round trip time, moss degradation again, packet loss, jitter, etc. And that allows you to click on the specific call. Again, the monitoring server provides you with a lot of information, and that's really useful to have this indicator in place, so you know where to look at. So you can see the average packet loss rate was way too high for a normal call. What would happen in real life is that the quality indicator in your client turns red, so it goes from green to red, and within about 8 seconds the client itself will disconnect, but probably before that the end user will already disconnect because the experience is not good when you have this many packet loss. Yeah.
Does it really disconnect after 8 seconds?
Yeah, about 8 seconds. Yeah, it disconnects.
So the client really drops the call then?
Yeah. Yeah, that happens. Yeah.
That's a hard limit.
I'm not sure. So I've tested it a lot of times, and that was the time I got. So it's not an official thing in the stack that I know about. But so I've emulated packet loss and other network artifacts. And that's what I've seen happening. But that's not usable anymore, right? So if you have 25%, so every 1 in 4 packets is missing, that's not going to give you a nice experience. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so it does that, yeah. And this was with audio only. So it could be that if you are in a conference and you have a mix of audio and data being shared, that it will drop just the audio. So yes, so here we can see, hopefully you can see it, it's 1.98, so the average network MOS degradation was pretty bad, and the monitoring server agrees, it makes it red. You can see a lot more actually happening. Yes, you can see a difference. So we have an average packet loss rate and a maximum packet loss rate. So I'm not sure if you can read the pop-up help there, but maximum packet loss rate, if that is high, that can also mean that your server is overloaded. Average packet loss rate, not just the network, but can also be your Skype for Business server itself. Jitter is mentioned here, no jitter. Round trip time is pretty good. And how much information was sent out. So that's the detailed report for this specific session. Other very useful reports can be found here. So I really like this one, the media quality comparison report, and that allows you to compare, as the name says, different scenarios. So what I see a lot is that we have issues with wireless, so you could compare all the wired calls to the wireless calls. Something you can also do really good with the call quality dashboard, actually. So that could be interesting to have a look at, to focus on the problem area. And for that, the server performance report. So that's also part of your of your media quality diagnostic reports. So the server performance report can also be interesting because it. So in my environment, I only have one server, but it's more interesting when you have more than one server. So you can see which server is having the issues. So if you want to differentiate between network issues and server issues, if all the issues occur on the same server, then maybe it's good to have a close look at that specific server. And again, you see the same information appearing here. So poor call percentage, most degradation, etc. And the last one. So if you define your network sites in Skype for Business, but that can be useful. So in my case, that's what I did. So I have my region NL as in Netherlands. And if you have multiple sites, then you can use the location report to look at the different sites and see how they perform on where the errors occur. So again, that helps you to isolate the issue. And that's one of the main things you always need to do when you start troubleshooting. So, again, a very useful part of the monitoring server. So, something I also really like is this one. It's a really old tool, actually. It used to be there in the OCS days. It's the pre-call diagnostics tool. So if you see a lot of problems occurring from specific clients, then this could be interesting to run on that client. It's not something for a normal end user, so you have to like things like this, but it's it shows you your network MOS, it shows you your packet loss rate and your jitter. So very useful to see if there's something going on with this specific client system, for instance. So the pre-call diagnostics tool. Yeah, it is. But here, this is real. This is my own screenshot. Yeah, it was gone. Yeah, it was gone for a couple of years and it's back again. Yeah, packet loss and things like that. Yeah, no, it's back. Yeah. So, what you do is you add your credentials that you also use in Skype for Business, and then it will connect to your backend. Can be used for online, like I've done here, but it can also be used for on-premises. Sorry. So, pre-call diagnostics tool. Can be useful to look at the last leg. So, just to give you a quick idea, call quality methodology. So the Microsoft introduced that to make sense of the data that you get in your monitoring server. It started out as additional SQL queries that you could run on your monitoring database and then use Excel and other kinds of reporting tools to make sense of the data and to separate between server-related issues, network-related issues, and endpoint-related issues. So the reason why I'm showing it to you here is then one of the scorecards that they provide with call quality management allows you to look at in which section the poor calls happened. So again, comparable to the monitoring report I just showed you. So that can be interesting. It's up to you if you prefer this over something else. I actually like to use the call quality dashboard for this, but it's up to you. The main reason I want to talk about call quality methodology is that Microsoft also introduced something called key health indicators. And the key health indicators, I know that a lot of people are not familiar with these. So how many performance counters do we have in Skype for Business? About 500, 600, 800. So we're not going to look at them all, not today, but so we're going to look at the top 10%. So about 80 performance counters are going to be used. Microsoft provides you with guidance about the healthy values for your performance counters, and we are going to collect them. I'm going to show you that in a moment, how that works. But it's really useful, and it helps you to check for server cost issues. That's why I like to use it for health checks. So It's part of the call quality methodology. So the key health indicators can help you to decide whether it's a server-based issue or not. Of course, you can always use SCOM or other monitoring products, but if you have SCOM in place, and even then it can be useful to use the separate key health indicators there. So it comes with a set of documentation. So you of course all read that before you start deploying. So just it's actually really useful because it not only explains how you should deploy your key health indicator, but it also talks about all the individual performance counters and what could be the cause of that performance counter not being optimal. So that's really useful information. You could also use it to tweak your monitoring solution. I've done it a couple of times. So interesting stuff there. So let's scroll down a little bit. So it comes with a PowerShell script, and that PowerShell script will create collections for you. So the performance counters can be collected in two ways. One is the diagram, but we're not going to do that. We want to see information from a longer period, and usually about a week. That's what I do. And then you get a CSV file with the performance count information over that week. So all the 80 performance counters are collected in that with that PowerShell script. And what you actually do is deploy that PowerShell script or use the PowerShell script to set the collection in, or how say it, to get it ready for collecting the information. And then you use a tool called Logman to actually start collecting the information. And that will result in that CSV file. So I usually do a week. And after that week, we have a nice set of CSV files per server that we wanted to monitor. So the CSV file is something that you will import in the Excel workbook. So in the Link 2010, they had a similar thing, but it was very, very basic. And that's the political way of saying that. But it's a lot better now. So if you click on start, that allows you to import the CSV files and the key health indicators have been defined here. So here you can see all the performance counters that are going to be collected and what the healthy value is. That is how it was with Link 2010. It's the only thing that you got with Link 2010. But it has become a lot better, and we now have this in place. So again, you import your CSV files. Let me zoom in a little bit here. And then you get a chart like this. So we talk about the rings in the key health indicator. So we have ring 0 in this case is the system itself, ring 1 is the network, and ring 2 is everything else. So it could be device related or something else. So in my lab, I had issues with ring 0, and that was because I didn't have enough memory in my systems. That's actually a thing that happens a lot. So I see a lot of customers that virtualize their environment. And quite often, the person responsible for the virtual environment is not the same that is responsible for Skype for Business. So they take away some hardware when they need it. It could be memory, could be CPU. I see that a lot. Also, people try to save money by going virtual. That's not how you should do that. So, but and then, anyway, it was an issue in Ring Zero. And in the second diagram, you can actually see the amount of counters that were not up to par for in that Ring Zero. So it was not all bad, just two counters. So it could have done with just what this diagram. So the next one is the timeline. For that, I'm going to use the documentation because they have a nicer timeline than I have. So you want to differentiate between incidents and something that is wrong all the time. So the timeline helps you to decide that. So if was it a peak? So maybe I had a backup job that ran or something else, or was it actually something that was wrong all of the time? So that's why where the timeline comes in handy. Again, with troubleshooting, differentiate between incidents or structural issues. So pretty cool. And next is the pivots in Dutch, draaitabel. And I'm really bad with Excel, I have to say that, but let's look here. So you have different views here. So you can look at ring 0, 1, or 2, and you can choose between the suboptimal or the optimal counters. So we are always interested in trouble, so that's why we look at suboptimal. And you can also select a specific server role, and if you have multiple servers in place, you can also select a specific server. So again, that helps you to identify and zoom in on the problem area. So in my case, I had memory issues, and probably because of that, SQL was not too happy too. So you can see the difference between what is optimal and how it was. So that's again something very useful for the to decide whether you have server issues or not. You can also take a look at the raw data, but this is actually a lot better than it used to be. You probably know the old version, and it's way better. So the charts and the timeline are very useful indeed. And when you look at again the documentation, you can see that I'm just going to scroll down a bit quick. But they explain all the counters here and what the healthy value should be and what you could do if it's not in the healthy range. So really, really good information to have. Yeah. No, this is live data. Yeah. So yeah, that's a good question. So it's so the PowerShell script that you use. So, yeah, I understand why you asked it, because I started talking about call quality methodology with the PowerShell script. So this the key health indicators comes with the PowerShell script that creates the collection for you, and then you start that collection with Logman. So it's totally independent of monitoring. You can even use it if you do not have monitoring in place. I can't imagine why you don't want to have monitoring in place, but it could be done. Yeah. Exactly, because you want to know which server is not performing well. And that's why the collection comes in handy, because you use the PowerShell script to create the collection, and then you use Logman to start collecting the information. So you can start it at the same time, let it run for a week, and then you have the CSV files per server, and you can actually import them all at the same time by clicking on that start button and then browsing to the CSV files. But yeah, it's totally independent from the monitoring server. Yeah. Of course, if you have SCOM, then you probably already have similar information, but the SCOM can be a bit daunting every now and then. So this is totally independent from SCOM. And even if you don't have SCOM in place, you can still use this. Yeah, so some of the counters are not Skype for Business specific, so CPU, memory, and things like that. Yeah, so you could do that. Yeah. So that's the key health indicator. Really useful, I think. Another thing I really like is the Statistics Manager, also known as Stat Manager. That's actually using the same information that we just talked about, but then in a real-time view. Who has used this already? Good. Yeah, a couple of you are. Yeah, of course, Johan has. Yeah, it's cool, right? So it's the Statsman uses the same information that we just talked about. You need to deploy agents on your servers to collect this information to a central database, and then use this web interface to look at your data. Microsoft is using this to monitor Office 365, so it should work for you too. So that's it's pretty sturdy. So Statistics Manager is a free to download for Skype for Business. Another thing I'm not going to talk about is Call Quality Dashboard, because Tola will talk about that later in detail, but pretty cool tool. Another thing that, well, I'm not sure if I should talk about this, but I'm going to do it. So the call quality feedback, who is using this? And what, yeah, so that's why, yeah, it's good. So we had the same discussion actually with Tola. So the, so where does the data end up? So, yeah, yeah, but how do you, how can you get it from?
Manual action that
yeah. That's weird, right? So they do provide, so it gets stored in the quality of experience database. There are third-party solutions out there that will provide you the information, but Microsoft doesn't do them themselves. They do provide you the SQL query that you should run in the documentation somewhere. It's really weird that they don't provide them a report for this. Yeah, 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 exactly, yeah. And they introduced this with Skype for Business, so that will be a great moment to add that. Nothing so far. You can actually create your own custom reports, right, and build it yourself, but it's not for everyone. So, yeah. So, it's so I like to use it actually for pilot setups. So if you start deploying Skype for Business, or a scenario that I see a lot is we want to test a new headset, for instance, and then we have a pilot group and we ask that pilot group to provide this feedback and not just ignore it. So that would be helpful. And we can also set the amount of or the interval that it appears, so a percentage of your calls with PowerShell. So you can only enable it for a certain pilot group and not for your complete user base. I also like to use this for dissatisfied users, so just to provide them a platform to complain. That helps. Sometimes that's enough, right? So that's yeah, yeah, yeah. So they're happy, we're happy. So that's good. You probably have someone in mind right now. So that's called quality feedback. So now we know a bit more about where to look. Is it a server related issue? Is it a network related issue? So of course it could be your network, that can happen. Quite often it's a matter of not having enough bandwidth. So that happens quite frequently. So Microsoft, so I'm not sure if you all know the story about quality of service on Microsoft, but when the Microsoft introduced OCS, they were really saying, you don't need quality of service in place. We have great stuff, audio healing and things like that going on. You don't need quality of service. That was actually marketing speak and not technical speak. The technical people within Microsoft know way better than that. But network management, quality of service is one of the management techniques. I will talk a bit more about that in a moment. Really useful. And the networking guide that Microsoft has, it's still the Link networking guide, has great, great guidance for troubleshooting, well, packet loss or other kinds of scenarios. I'll show a little bit from that in a moment. If it is Skype for Business, use your key health indicators to decide to check which server is causing the issues and which components are causing those issues. Check your hardware. Your key health indicator will do that for you. But yeah, usually CPU or memory issues. And again, the antivirus solutions. I see that so often. The people deploy antivirus solutions in a wrong way. Sometimes even on the virtualization host, weird stuff is happening there. So I'm not saying that you should not deploy antivirus solutions, but you just follow the recommendations. And also something that I see a lot is virtualization done wrong. So I think it's a discussion by itself whether you should virtualize Skype for Business or not. I think only when you really, really, really need to. Otherwise, I prefer not to virtualize it. But it's it can be done, but it can be done good and it can be done wrong. So look at that again. Your key health indicators will help you with that. It's usually a resource issue. So let's talk a little bit about network management. So what we can do. So one of the things that you can use is column mission control. And call emission control is something that Microsoft calls bandwidth policy management in the product itself. It's not something that I see a lot. So I see it usually when you have not enough bandwidth. And something that you can also set is the amount of bandwidth that you get per session. And by doing so, you can prevent fallback from wideband to narrowband codecs. So if during the session you have less bandwidth than you started out with, because more people are starting to set up a call, for instance, then your audio quality could drop from the bitrate could go down, or you could even switch from wideband to a narrowband version of the codec. And that's something that you can hear if you if you use decent headsets. It's not a reason not to use decent headsets, but it's something you can hear. So call emission control can help with that. So yeah. So from a networking perspective, I want to talk a bit more about quality of service. I'm also mentioning software-defined networking. I'm not going to go on that. Really interesting topic, still a bit new. But software-defined networking can help with automating quality of service, also with gathering real-time packet loss information and things like that. Really interesting. This is not my own diagram, but I really like this one. So, of course, quality of service visualized. Excuse me. So, emotions again. So, for audio, we can use quality of service to prioritize audio traffic over other traffic. And actually, quality of service also allows you to reserve bandwidth. Another value is being used for video, and another value is being used for other types of traffic. So that can really help with quality of service. A third party tool that I love to use for quality of service is this one by Pat Richards. He's great with PowerShell, both for Exchange and Skype for Business. And what he does is he has a tool that uses an Excel spreadsheet, and this Excel spreadsheet that you see here starts with defining the ranges. So what's going to happen is that we need to enable a quality of service on your server end and on your client end. On your client end, for your Skype for Business desktop client, you're going to set fixed port ranges for audio, video, and other types of traffic. Connect that to the link executable. So when you see traffic from the link executable occurring from within a certain port range, you know, okay, that has to be audio. So you'll tag that as audio traffic. It's quite cumbersome to deploy that by yourself, but he is making that really easy for you, because you need to deploy group policies for that. And that also means that you need to have control over your clients via the group policies. That's not always happening, but so that's really easy to do with the tool that he has created for that. One thing that still surprises me is that the Link Phone Edition doesn't use port 46, but 40 by default. But I don't know why, but it does. So that's something that you should not forget. Otherwise, you have crappy audio over your IP phones and good audio over your Link desktop client. And that's going to take another troubleshoot session to figure that one out. So that's something you should keep in mind. It's something that you can change with PowerShell or even in your control panel. It's in the client section of your control panel. So yes, I would look at that. So we kind of quick look at the networking guide, just to look at the specific troubleshoot section there. So there used to be a whole collection of networking related white papers. They decided to make it into one quite substantial networking white paper, and that's called the Networking Guide. It's still called the Link 2013 Networking Guide, but it also is valid for Skype for Business. So it starts with the whole network assessment, discovery, modeling, traffic simulation, and things like that. And here they talk about quality of service, how to deploy group policies for that. Again, another topic that can cause a lot of grief is Wi-Fi. So that's why it's there in the networking guides. And here they start actually explaining monitoring. So the monitoring server, all the components that are being monitored are explained in here. And they also have some really cool troubleshoot scenarios explained in detail. They also explained a bit more about the audio quality model that I talked about at the beginning. And for now, I want to go to the troubleshooting poor streams section over here. It's way down in the document, so a lot of people don't get there when they read white papers, so they've given up by now, but it's actually really useful. So they have really cool information that helps you to work with the network people to try to identify the cause of your packet loss. So that's they actually have a complete flow for that. It should be here. Yeah, so here it is. So they have a complete troubleshoot flow that you can use to look at the details. It can be helpful if you're not that familiar with networking side of things. I usually work together with the networking department, for they have their own area of specialization. But if you are at this point, if you know that, okay, our servers are performing okay, they are healthy, if you look at the key health indicators, but we still see network issues occurring, and now you have a decent answer to provide when they start asking you questions. Is it the network, or is maybe Skype for Business itself causing some grief there? So, yeah, sure. Yeah, sure, thanks. So, that was the networking guide. And let's skip a couple of things there. So, just a second. Yeah, here we are. So, to conclude it, you have plenty of troubleshoot options. I only covered two, basically the monitoring server a little bit and key health indicators. It's really important to know the context. So, is it an incident, or is it something that occurs quite often? Is it something that happens during the day or during the night? Something that the timeline can help with. So if you have enough information to decide that it's really the network, then you can have a more detailed look at the section that is causing issues there. Prevention is better. It sounds like an easy remark to make, but that's really a network assessment is really, really, really important to do. And network assessment is explained in the networking guide, but you should take care of that. Have enough bandwidth. Yeah, that's a nice one to say, but that's really, really important. Proactive monitoring is something that you should do. So the monitoring server and the key health indicators are not proactive monitoring tools, but the statistics manager is, for instance, or SCOM or another tool that you may have for that. And quality of service is quite often something that I would consider. So if you need to deploy completely new networking hardware just to be able to deploy quality of service, then maybe it's a bit too much. But if your hardware already supports quality of service, then I would really recommend that. I also actually see some networking issues that are caused by quality of service because they don't tag it properly. So that's one of the things that you should check when you do your network validation, your network assessment. It's easy to see. You can use a network capture tool for that, and that can cause issues just by itself. So that's it for me. Yeah. So I'm trying to use a message analyzer. I like the message analyzer, but sometimes it takes so long to start up that I
noticed that some tools cross different subnets.
Yeah.
That you're missing pieces.
Oh, okay, right. Okay. Yeah.
And like the
old
Microsoft network
monitoring. Yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah. You can still use it, right? Yeah. I don't know how message analyzer sits in that. It's interesting to look at. Yeah, I like the message analyzer tool. It's the analyzer tool that analyzes everything. It also includes Fiddler and other stuff. It's actually really interesting, but it comes with the training, and you really need it to take that training before you can use it. But the same applies to Wireshark, right? So yeah, but it's interesting. Yeah, other questions? So my voice kind of held up, so I'm not going to overstay my welcome in that case. So thank you for your time.